It is Monday, September 28th, 2015, and you are listening to The Kickabout. The Kickabout is the Nationals podcast focusing on football in the UAE, and it is part of the Extra Time series. I am your host, Paul Freeland, and joining me today is Paul Oberjergi, sports editor of The National. Paul, good afternoon.
Hi, Paul. Always happy to be here.
Folks, we are officially 2/13 through the way of the Arabian Gulf League season. After just four matches, a few surprises have emerged. Week four was just this past weekend, and for the result of the round, probably Dibba beating Al Jazeera 4-2 at home. We also had Banias and Al-Shabaab drawing 1-1, and Al-Wada beating champions Al-Ain 2-1 on Saturday. On Sunday, Emirates versus Fujairah, Al-Dhafra v. Al-Shabaab, and Sharjah v. Al-Nasr all finished 1-1 as everyone was in a sharing mood. Paul, we'll just start with that first result. Dibba beating Jazeera, probably one of the biggest upsets in recent memory. You know, promoted sides in this league are seemingly destined for the drop the moment they come up, just such as the Gulf in resources and talent. How concerned should Al Jazeera be after two losses and having 9 goals conceded in 4 games? Are they going to regret not using one of those new foreign players to shore up their defense?
I'm not sure they'll regret that because this is what they do every year. They never bring in a defensive player. The closest they get to it generally is a defensive mid now and then. And one or two of those have ended up in the back four. They definitely should be worried because this has been going on for a while now, just leaking goals. Last year, they gave up more goals than all but two teams in the league, and they finished second despite it. The difference this year is they're not winning those 4-2 games. They lost one. Now, Dibba is not as bad as they looked, and I have a lot of respect for their coach, Theo Bucker, who's a German guy. UAE fans may remember him as Lebanon's coach when Lebanon essentially knocked the UAE out of the World Cup qualifying in 2011 when they won 3-1 in Beirut. But, you know, giving up four is something that we almost come to expect from Jazeera, and unless they tighten up the back and maybe make some personnel changes, this is going to happen again.
Yeah, and it does seem to be a systemic thing. It's like it happened under Walter Zenga, it happened under Eric Gerrits, and now they brought back Abel Braga, who won the last league title for Al Jazeera, and these defensive problems are still happening. So it's just the players, but yeah, as they say, you can't exactly fire the playing staff as opposed to the coach. And looking across town, Al-Wada, they lost two of their first three games in the AGL, and in the League Cup, they drew 3-3 with Dibba and Fujairah, needing to come from behind both times to do so. But on Saturday, even with marquee signing Jorge Valdivia looking awfully pedestrian at times, they still managed to beat Al-Ain 2-1 in a game where the Al-Wada drew 8 yellow cards. Anyone who's seen Javier Aguirre's, say, Mexico or Osasuna teams play probably wouldn't be all that surprised. Paul, just how much should we read into Al-Ain looking mortal and then right now Al-Nasr leading the league?
I think it's way too early to give up on Al-Ain or even to suggest they're in trouble. They had not had a really limp league game in a very long time, since maybe the first half of last season. And that's essentially what their coach said afterward, that perhaps they were due. The crowd was good. There was a lot of emotion at that match, which you don't often see in the league. And I think Wada sort of rode it. It was not a good-looking game. As you mentioned, they ate cautions. It was a little chippy. I think Al-Ain will be back. I think also at work, I wonder a little bit if some of the national team players that are with Al-Ain were already thinking ahead to Saudi, which is an enormous match coming up soon in World Cup qualifying. As for Nasr leading the league, they haven't really played anybody, to be fair. Sharjah had not won a point until last night when they drew with Nasr. I think Nasr could be good. I like their coach very much, Jovanovic. Reaching the final eight of the UEFA Champions League, as he did when he was coaching in Cyprus, is an amazing feat. I think they'll be competent, but I don't see them finishing ahead of either Al Ahly or Al-Ain.
And then I think we should also I'll touch again on Wada real quick, because I said that's anyone beating Al-Ain in this league certainly deserves comment. I said Valdivia, he's probably still getting up to speed here. Like, he was a late arrival, and then he'd played in the Copa America, so he, you know, still coming down from that, helping Chile win that. Is it, they got Danielson, and then, but I said the one holdover, Sebastian Tagliabue, he's still going great guns. He scored last night, and he seems to be the rock on which this is built. So from what you've seen of Alwada this season, they've won two and lost two. Was this a one-off, or is this a team that can, you think, genuinely challenge for something this season?
I think they have the potential to challenge. I don't think we know what they are yet exactly. Valdivia's played in only two of their league matches. In the first one, Tagliabue got lost. It was almost as if Valdivia had no clear idea what to do with Tagliabue on the field. That changed, obviously, over the weekend. Ismail Matar, we don't know how much he has left. He's an important player with them. Danielson has not looked particularly influential. That's got to be a little bit scary. Hamdan Al-Kamali continues to decline. One of the great players in the country a few years ago now struggles, seems angry much of the time. But we have Valdivia, who still has a little of that magician thing going on. And as you noted, Tagliabue is out there still doing what he does. He scored 28 goals two seasons ago. He already has a batch this year. I think it's, what, six in four league games? And, you know, as long as he's scoring and an underrated keeper at the end, at the other end, Adela Hosani, he's not a great keeper, but he's solid, and he's been there forever now. It's like 6 or 7 years. I think they have the capacity to challenge. I'm not sure they will. And Valdivia is the key. He's such a volatile guy.
And then one of the other peculiarities in the league table so far is Al-Ahli. You know, they're down there in the middle, but they've only played twice. As if they've had games against Emirates and Al-Wasl postponed to clear the way for their run in the Asian Champions League. And so far, that seems to be working. Just in the quarterfinals, Rodrigo Lima scored twice, and Ahmed Khalil got his sixth goal of the campaign as Ahli saw off Naf Tehran 3-1 on aggregate, and they advanced to play Saudi club Al-Hilal. Now, this is Al-Ahli's deepest progress into the Champions League, and they never even made it out of the group stage previously. Paul, Al-Hilal is like one of the biggest known quantities in West Asia. I said they're there or thereabouts in this stage almost every year. You know, they've got resources to match, if not beat, anything anyone in the UAE can manage. So how do you rate Ali's chances against Al-Hilal? And what would it mean to Emirati football to have a club other than Al-Ain playing for the Champions League title?
I think they have more than a decent chance. The key will be tomorrow night, Tuesday night, when they play the first leg in Riyadh. Emirati teams have had trouble in Saudi in general and against Al-Hilal in specific. If they can get in and not get annihilated, not get overwhelmed, not get intimidated by the crowd, and get out with maybe a one-goal loss, if they can score a goal, that would be a big deal. A 2-1 loss would give them a chance, a fighting chance in the second leg. And I think they're capable of doing that, in part because Cosmin Olaruy, who is Ali's coach, is a former Hilal coach, and he can at least talk it through with his team. This is what it's going to be like. I've been here. This is what they'll do. This is what they'll say. This is what you'll hear. So I think they have a chance, but they cannot get destroyed as Al Ain were in this very same fixture at the same place in the semifinals a year ago, 3-0. That just ended that tie. As for what it would do for the league, it would certainly broaden it. I mean, we know from recent history that Al-Ahli is pretty much every bit as good as Al Ain. We've seen it in the league. They're serious rivals now, and if they can get to the final of the Champions League, that would be huge for that club. It'd also be huge for the UAE because they haven't really gotten that far in a very long time.
Well, and as Paul mentioned, the first leg is Tuesday in Riyadh, with a return leg in Dubai on October 20th. And just for the sake of being a completist, the other Champions League semifinal series out east is China's Guangzhou Evergrande versus Gamba Osaka of Japan. So that's some big names and some big money floating around out there in the Final Four of the Champions League. But the AGL is going on another brief hiatus while Al-Ahli are playing on the on the continent because 2018 World Cup qualifying continues. After opening qualifying against East Timor, Malaysia, and Palestine, the UAE faced their biggest challenge so far, Saudi Arabia, as Paul mentioned earlier. Hamadi Ali's men top Group A by 1 point over the Saudis, but they have played an extra game, meaning the UAE have to at least avoid defeat in Jeddah on October 8th to make sure they're still in touch with the Saudis going into the second half of this round. Now, the UAE have won two and drawn none of their past 13 matches against the Saudis. And as I said, as we've mentioned on this podcast before, if there's one team that knows how to stop the UAE and Omar Abdulrahman in particular, it's Saudi Arabia. So, Paul, does this UAE team have what it takes to earn at least a point on Saudi soil and keep first place in the group within their sights?
I think they have the potential to do it. It would be a great accomplishment. And that would be their goal, certainly. I think is, you know, people who've studied the table know that you can trace a path to falling out of the competition, the World Cup qualifying. This round is possible if they can't get a point out of Saudi on October 8. I mean, we know what's going to happen. They just as they did in the most recent Gulf Cup of Nations, Saudi is going to attack Omar Abdulrahman. They're going to go after his legs. They're going to try to take him out of the game. It's a cynical ploy. I'm surprised more teams don't do it, actually. If they can get out of there with a draw, that would be huge. If they can win, it would rank with some of the best victories in the history of the national team. The final two matches of this World Cup qualifying phase group are both home games for the UAE against Palestine and against Saudi. If they can show up there even tied with them or even 1 point behind, I think they can pull this off and advance to the final group phase. But if they lose tomorrow and they lose heavily, I mean, October 8th, all of a sudden what looked like, you know, this whole golden generation thing, that could be aborted right now, right in this round.
And that's right about the stage where it ended in the qualifying for 2014 as well, which would that would certainly, you know, be a shock to the system. But as with three of their final four qualifiers at home, you know, they're still in with a chance. So stay tuned. Still lots to come on this front. You've been listening to The Kickabout. This podcast was edited by Marwan Al-Hamadi and produced by the National's Multimedia Desk. Follow the Multimedia Desk on Twitter at NSVUAE and the Sports Desk at NATSportUAE. I'm Paul Freeland. Thanks for listening.